Charlotte Mason's school education arrives like a refreshing breeze in an era where educational trends come and go with alarming frequency. This 1904 work remains strikingly relevant today, offering a vision of education that respects children as whole persons rather than empty vessels to be filled. Mason, a British educator whose methods influenced homeschooling movements worldwide, rejected the mechanistic approaches of her time in favor of a philosophy that recognized children's natural intelligence and curiosity. Her work has been embraced by figures ranging from educational reformers like John Holt to celebrities like Julie Bowen, who has spoken about implementing Mason's principles with her own children. More than a century later, Mason's emphasis on living books over textbooks and direct experience with nature continues to challenge our screen-dominated educational landscape, offering a compelling alternative to standardized testing and rote memorization. At the heart of Mason's educational philosophy lies a delicate balance between authority and docility. This isn't about autocratic rule or blind obedience, but rather a relationship built on mutual respect and natural responsiveness. True authority, Mason argues, differs fundamentally from autocracy. Where autocracy is self-derived, harsh, and inconsistent, genuine authority is calm, consistent, and recognizes itself as commissioned rather than absolute. Consider the difference. An autocratic parent locks a child in a church vestry or denies puddings to teach arbitrary lessons, while proper authority doesn't anxiously watch for compliance or repeat commands, but trusts the child to obey. Authority isn't uneasy or captious, but confident in its legitimate commission, avoiding both excessive commands and indulgent permissiveness. Children naturally respond to this authentic authority with docility, not blind obedience, but a willing receptivity. This natural response spares children the exhausting effort of constant decision-making. As Mason puts it, the habit of prompt obedience is a relief and not a burden to children. When authority is properly exercised, it creates a secure framework within which children can develop and thrive. This concept has profound implications for modern parenting and teaching. In an age where authority is often questioned and traditional structures challenged, Mason reminds us that children actually desire the security that comes from proper authority. The parent or teacher who understands this principle doesn't need to resort to bribes, threats, or manipulation to gain cooperation. Instead, they cultivate an atmosphere of mutual respect where obedience flows naturally from the relationship itself. The key insight is that authority must be properly vested in the office of parent or teacher, not wielded as personal power. When we grasp this distinction, we avoid the twin pitfalls of harsh authoritarianism and permissive indulgence, creating instead an environment where children can develop self-discipline and moral character. Perhaps one of Mason's most counterintuitive yet profound concepts is what she calls masterly inactivity, a wise letting alone that includes good humor, self-confidence, and the fine, easy way of fathers who trust their children's capabilities. This approach stands in stark contrast to the anxious hovering that characterizes much modern parenting, where parents feel compelled to orchestrate every moment of their children's lives. Our increased sense of parental responsibility represents moral progress, Mason acknowledges, yet often manifests as anxiety during this transitional stage of educational thought. Mason parents develop what she calls a fussy, restless habit of constant intervention, believing they must direct every aspect of their children's development. This anxiety often leads to micromanaging children's play, academic work, and social interactions, ultimately undermining their natural development process. The concept of masterly inactivity comprises several essential elements: the serenity of a Madonna, genuine leisure that allows children space to grow, and unwavering faith in both the children and the natural processes of development. It requires parents to abandon the pretense of omniscience and recognize the delicate balance between fate and free will in their children's development. This approach demands a particular kind of strength, the ability to stay present while resisting the urge to intervene unnecessarily. Consider these practical examples. When a child struggles with a difficult puzzle, the anxious parent might jump in at the first sign of frustration, demonstrating the solution or even completing it for the child. The parent practicing masterly inactivity, however, remains present but restrained, offering encouragement but allowing the child to work through the challenge independently. Similarly, when a child faces social conflicts on the playground, the wise parent might observe from a distance rather than immediately stepping in to mediate every disagreement. Mason's insight feels particularly relevant in our age of helicopter parenting and overscheduled childhoods. When we constantly intervene, we communicate a lack of faith in our children's abilities and deprive them of valuable learning experiences. Masterly inactivity, by contrast, conveys our confidence that they can handle challenges and learn from both success and failure. It creates space for the development of independence, creativity, and self-regulation, qualities essential for success in adult life. This approach extends beyond academic or play situations into everyday life. Whether it's allowing a child to pack their own school bag and face the natural consequences of forgetting something, prepare a simple meal, or navigate public transportation with appropriate supervision, masterly inactivity builds competence through experience. The parent's role becomes that of a wise guide rather than a constant director, offering support while gradually stepping back to allow increasing independence. The practice of masterly inactivity also acknowledges that children need unstructured time for mental and emotional growth. In our rush to provide enrichment activities and educational opportunities, we sometimes forget the vital importance of allowing children to be bored, to daydream, and to figure things out for themselves. This wise letting alone creates the conditions for authentic learning and personal development. Mason insists we must recognize children as complete persons with inherent rights and dignities, not merely as unformed adults or empty vessels to be filled. Children deserve freedom in their play, she writes, not the organized games adults often impose, but genuine spontaneous play that springs from their own initiative. This respect extends beyond play to all aspects of children's lives. They must be allowed personal initiative in work, standing or falling by their own efforts, rather than being constantly propped up. We must recognize that boys and girls are generally dutiful when given proper responsibility. Children should choose their own friends, spend their own pocket money, and form their own opinions without undue adult interference. The essence of childhood, Mason argues, is spontaneity, which must be preserved rather than constrained by excessive adult direction. When we overmanage children's lives, we rob them of the opportunity to develop judgment, independence, and self-knowledge. A child who never makes choices, and sometimes mistakes, grows into an adult who lacks confidence in their own decision-making abilities. Consider how this applies to modern childhood. Today's children often move from one structured activity to another, with little time for free play or self-directed learning. Their friendships are frequently managed by parents through playdates and organized activities. Their time is scheduled, their activities chosen for them, and their natural spontaneity constrained by adult agendas and anxieties. Mason's vision offers a refreshing alternative. She encourages us to step back and allow children the freedom to explore their world, form their own relationships, and develop their own interests. This doesn't mean abandoning guidance or boundaries, but rather providing a secure framework within which children can exercise appropriate autonomy. When we respect children as persons with their own rights and dignities, we prepare them not just for academic success, but for a fulfilling life characterized by self-direction, personal responsibility, and genuine engagement with the world around them. At the heart of Mason's educational philosophy lies her conception of education as the science of relations. This isn't about forcing connections between subjects in an artificial way, but rather about helping children establish meaningful relationships with the world around them, with nature, with ideas, with people past and present, and ultimately with God. A human being possesses both capacities and limitations that must be addressed in education, Mason explains. Children come into the world with natural affinities for knowledge and understanding, but these must be nurtured through appropriate exposure and guidance. Nature provides children with every power they will need, she writes, but the fullness of living depends on establishing relations with the world. Consider the story Mason tells of a 7-year-old girl handling an oar for the first time. The child remarked on crab water being tough and knocking her off her seat. Though scientifically incorrect, she was gathering real experiential knowledge about water resistance, far better than memorizing from a textbook that the particles which constitute water have no cohesion. This direct relationship with the physical world creates understanding that abstract instruction alone cannot achieve. This approach extends to all areas of knowledge. Rather than presenting children with dry facts and pre-digested information, Mason advocates introducing them to living books written by authors passionate about their subjects. Through these books, children form relationships with great minds across time and space. Similarly, direct experience with nature, art, music, and handicrafts establishes connections that enrich the child's understanding of the world. The implications of this view are profound. Education becomes not a process of filling empty minds with information, but rather of helping children establish meaningful connections with the vast inheritance of human knowledge and experience. A child who develops these relationships approaches learning not as a chore, but as a joy, a natural extension of their curiosity about the world. In our age of standardized testing and curriculum narrowing, Mason's vision offers a powerful alternative. When we focus on helping children establish genuine relationships with knowledge, rather than merely preparing them for examinations, we cultivate not just academic success, but lifelong learning and engagement. For Mason, education hinges on exposure to living ideas rather than dry facts. The right books sustain the life of thought and kindle enthusiasm in children, she argues, citing the example of schoolgirls who developed passionate interest in historical periods through their reading. Publishers' typical school books fail to nourish the mind, leading teachers to rely on oral lessons despite their limitations. Mason distinguishes between living books that engage the imagination and convey the author's passion for their subject, and the twaddle of simplified textbooks and readers that present information in a diluted, pre-digested form. A living book, regardless of its difficulty, finds its way to a young reader's mind because it speaks to them as one intelligence to another. Our aim must be to give children a full life through vital knowledge, facts presented with their informing ideas, Mason insists. We consistently undervalue children's intellectual capabilities. Today's children, like those of previous generations, hunger for knowledge presented in living books that offer vitalizing ideas rather than dry facts. This approach transforms the teacher's role from dispenser of information to facilitator of relationships between children and knowledge. Rather than lecturing or explaining everything, the teacher introduces children to books and then steps back, allowing them to engage directly with the author's ideas. After reading, children narrate what they've learned, retelling it in their own words, which helps them process and internalize the material. Consider how this contrasts with common educational practices. In many classrooms, textbooks present simplified information, stripped of the passion and personality that makes subjects come alive. Teachers often feel compelled to explain and re-explain concepts, robbing children of the opportunity to wrestle with ideas themselves. The result is passive learning rather than active engagement. Mason's approach, by contrast, treats children as capable thinkers who can engage directly with challenging ideas. When a child reads about the French Revolution from a historian who brings the period to life, or learns about nature from an author who conveys genuine wonder and curiosity, they develop not just knowledge, but passion for the subject. This vision of education through living books and ideas remains revolutionary today. In an age of information overload, Mason reminds us that true education isn't about accumulating facts, but about forming relationships with knowledge that transform how we see and interact with the world. Mason recognized that education must address the whole person, physical, intellectual, and moral, rather than focusing exclusively on academic achievement. Each of these domains requires thoughtful attention and appropriate methods. In physical education, Mason argues that the goal isn't merely health, but a serviceable body that acknowledges ye are not your own. Physical training should develop not just strength and skill, but also self-restraint, self-control, and self-discipline. We must cultivate local habits of physical response, alertness, and quick perception. Most importantly, physical education should include stimulating ideas that inspire fortitude, service, courage, prudence, and chastity. This holistic approach to physical development stands in stark contrast to modern physical education that often focuses narrowly on sports skills or fitness metrics. Mason saw physical training as integral to character formation, not separate from it. The body must be trained not merely for its own sake, but as an instrument of the person's will and character. Intellectual training, similarly, goes beyond the accumulation of facts to the formation of habits of mind. Mason identifies several crucial intellectual habits: attention, the ability to focus the mind fully on a subject; concentration, thoroughness; intellectual volition, making ourselves think of a given subject at will; accuracy, and reflection. These habits, rather than the specific content of studies, constitute what we call ability. Perhaps most countercultural is Mason's insistence on moral training as an essential component of education. Moral training rests on three foundation principles, she explains: authority as the basis of moral teaching, principles rather than rules, and recognition of authority's limitations. Children aren't born with innate moral knowledge. They must be taught duty and virtue through both instruction and example. This moral education isn't about imposing a rigid code of behavior, but about cultivating an understanding of one's responsibilities to others and to God. Through exposure to noble examples in literature and history, children develop an appreciation for virtues like honesty, courage, and kindness. These virtues become not external rules to be followed, but internal principles that guide behavior. Mason's integrated approach to physical, intellectual, and moral development offers a powerful alternative to educational systems that focus narrowly on academic achievement or test scores. By addressing the whole person, we prepare children not just for examinations, but for life, for making meaningful contributions to society and finding fulfillment in their relationships and work. Mason's educational philosophy can be summarized in her memorable motto: education is an atmosphere, a discipline, a life. This three-part formula captures the essential elements of her approach and provides a framework for understanding how children learn and develop. By atmosphere, Mason means the environment, both physical and cultural, in which education takes place. She cautions, however, against relying too heavily on this aspect alone. While creating an enriching environment matters, though we can't live without air, neither can we live upon air alone. Children raised solely on environment show what she calls inanition: little curiosity, poor attention, lack of effort, and worse, they lose spontaneity and initiative. Discipline refers to the formation of good habits, both intellectual and moral. These habits provide the structure and skills necessary for learning and living well. But again, Mason warns against making this the exclusive focus of education. When we emphasize discipline alone, we risk producing abnormal developments, individuals who excel in narrow areas but lack broader understanding and appreciation. Life represents the vital ideas that nourish the mind and spirit. Mason argues that the 19th century formula, education is an atmosphere, leads to inanition and ennui when isolated, while the 18th century idea that education is a life results in intellectual exhaustion when pursued alone. We need all three elements working in harmony. The unifying principle that brings these elements together is what Mason calls her captain idea, that education is the science of relations. This means education should help children establish meaningful connections with the world around them, with ideas, with people, past and present, and with God. A wide curriculum is essential, where no subjects are arbitrarily rejected. This comprehensive vision stands in stark contrast to educational approaches that focus narrowly on specific outcomes or methods. Mason reminds us that education isn't primarily about preparing for examinations or careers, but about helping children develop into fully realized human beings who engage meaningfully with the world around them. When we embrace this master thought, education becomes not a burden, but a joy for both children and teachers. Learning flows naturally from curiosity and engagement rather than being imposed through external pressure or artificial rewards. The result is not just academic achievement, but a lifelong love of learning and a capacity for meaningful contribution to society. Charlotte Mason's educational philosophy offers not just theoretical insights, but practical guidance for parents and teachers seeking to implement her vision. Her approach has been successfully applied in diverse settings, from homeschools to traditional classrooms, demonstrating its flexibility and effectiveness. At the heart of Mason's practical methodology is the use of living books rather than textbooks. These are works written by authors passionate about their subjects, conveying not just information, but enthusiasm and insight. When children engage with such books, they form relationships with both the subject matter and the minds behind it. After reading, children practice narration, retelling what they've learned in their own words. This simple but powerful technique helps them process and internalize information while developing language skills and confidence. As Mason notes, the simplest way to handle a paragraph or chapter is requiring the child to narrate its contents after a single attentive reading. Nature study forms another cornerstone of Mason's approach. Children spend regular time outdoors, observing and recording what they see in nature notebooks. This direct engagement with the natural world develops observation skills, scientific understanding, and appreciation for beauty. Mason insists that all school children should have a half day weekly in the fields throughout the year to watch the season's procession. The curriculum is intentionally broad, introducing children to a wide range of subjects, including literature, history, geography, science, mathematics, languages, art, music, and handicrafts. Short, focused lessons maintain attention and interest, with children typically spending no more than 20-30 minutes on any single subject before moving to another. Remarkably, this approach results in shorter school days rather than longer ones. Mason reports that in the Parents' Review School, no bookwork, writing, preparation, or reports are done except between 9 and 11:30 for the lowest class and 9 and 1 for the highest. Afternoons are reserved for handicrafts, fieldwork, and drawing, while evenings remain completely free. They accomplish more in less time because children develop habits of close attention and are carried forward by steady interest. The examination work showcased in Mason's appendices demonstrates the effectiveness of her methods. Children as young as 6 narrate with impressive detail and coherence after a single reading. By 12, they display remarkable knowledge across multiple subjects, from Bible studies to botany, from history to languages. For modern educators and parents, Mason's practical guidance offers a refreshing alternative to test-driven curricula and worksheet-heavy instruction. By focusing on living books, direct observation, narration, and a broad curriculum, we can cultivate not just academic achievement, but genuine love of learning that lasts a lifetime. More than a century after its publication, Charlotte Mason's School Education continues to inspire and guide educators around the world. Her vision of education as the science of relations speaks powerfully to our contemporary challenges, offering wisdom that transcends the particular circumstances of her Victorian era. In an age of increasing standardization and test-driven curricula, Mason reminds us that education is fundamentally about relationships with knowledge, with nature, with people past and present, and with God. Her approach honors the personhood of each child, recognizing their natural intelligence and curiosity rather than treating them as empty vessels to be filled or raw material to be shaped. Mason's emphasis on living books offers a compelling alternative to the information overload of our digital age. While children today have unprecedented access to facts and data, they often lack meaningful engagement with ideas. By introducing them to authors who write with passion and insight, we can help them develop not just knowledge, but wisdom, the ability to discern what matters and why. Her concept of masterly inactivity provides a much-needed corrective to the anxiety-driven hovering that characterizes much modern parenting. In a culture that often equates good parenting with constant intervention and management, Mason encourages us to step back, trust the natural processes of development, and allow children space to grow into their own unique selves. Perhaps most importantly, Mason's integrated approach to physical, intellectual, and moral development challenges the fragmentation that characterizes much contemporary education. Rather than treating these as separate domains to be addressed by different specialists, she reminds us that education concerns the whole person, body, mind, and spirit working in harmony. The testimonies of children educated according to Mason's principles, both in her time and ours, attest to the effectiveness of her approach. They display not just academic achievement, but genuine enthusiasm for learning, keen observation skills, moral sensitivity, and creative engagement with the world around them. As we navigate the complex educational challenges of the 21st century, Charlotte Mason offers not a rigid system to be followed mechanically, but a living philosophy that can adapt to changing circumstances while remaining true to fundamental principles. Her vision of education as the science of relations invites us to reconsider what truly matters in the formation of young minds and hearts, challenging us to create educational experiences that honor the full humanity of every child.